Hello, lovely people. How are we all doing? Wonderful, wonderful. I'm Talal Kerkouti. I co-host, produce the Lexel podcast. Who's here is a listener of the show? Hey! Well done, showing up. Who has never heard the podcast? That's a fair few of you. Okay, prepare to be disappointed. Okay, are we recording, Adam? All right, let's get into it then, shall we? Well, we will take questions towards the end of the show. We're going to turn to you for questions. So start getting them bouncing around your noggin. And let's do it. It's Sunday, the 11th of May. We're at the Museum of Comedy. It's our third live show this year. Let's get going. Let's bring out Alexi Sale.
I was a bit disturbed to hear that you've got a following now. I think it might be your last.
No!
Might be your last. You're going to be replaced with somebody else. Somebody else from the. Yeah. It's now being replaced with somebody else from the job centre.
You know, I've had two dreams about you in the last week. And the first of them was you went off and started a podcast with someone else.
Really?
Fucked sure. me up. And I woke up. Do you remember? I woke up and called you.
Yes.
Is it true, Alexi? And then last night I dreamt about you again, about this show tonight. You
right.
showed up.
Yeah.
And you were wearing these. You said, check out my Malaysian trousers. You kept saying, look at my Malaysian trousers.
Right.
And they were these transparent mesh trousers. And you sat on the stage and you spread your legs open. I was like, what are you doing? So that's what, I think I've shared too much. I've gone red.
Yeah, your Malaysian trousers. You're definitely getting replaced.
You've infiltrated my psyche, man.
We're having a conversation. You confide in me just before we go on, which is always a mistake. We had we said last week. You said, "What was it?" You said, "I've got your back," which is what your improv troupe says.
Yeah, we say. To
and then
each
you
other.
Said to me, "Have you got my back?" And I said, "Fuck no."
Yeah.
I will throw you to the comedy walls. But this, because your mum is also in the audience tonight, and you can... Yeah, Miss...
Hi, Mum.
Mrs. Cox.
There she is.
Masalam.
Hello, Mum.
Talal.
Exactly, yeah.
Talal, yeah.
Talal, Mrs. Kerkouti. So I've got my mum and my new dad in one room.
But you told me that... you'd come here on your bicycle that had given you a funny feeling in your groin. A kind of tingling, which you said was quite pleasant, really. And, I said, didn't you? You said you had a funny feeling in your groin.
Yeah.
So we need to have that talk. You should have had that talk with him about what the tingling in the groin means. But
it was quite disturbing because, I was having... very pleasant sensations while talking to James at the front desk at the Museum of Comedy. I need to go to the green room.
That's very complicated. Okay, so I'm not your dad. So anyway.
No, sir. Sorry, sir. Of course not, sir.
So, just to be done a little bit of preparation. So, those of you probably, most of you know, the Chortle is the go-to website of the comedy business. And there was a headline, I think it was the front page of a couple of days ago on Chortle, which said, joke about emu being in the SS. was not historically accurate. I did have some forewarning of this, but a listener complained over Alexi Sale's Radio 4 routine. A Radio 4 listener complained that an Alexi Sale routine included a joke about Rod Hull and Emu being members of the Nazi SS. was not historically accurate.
Whoa, what? Come on.
I mean, so the BBC's editorial complaints unit investigated the comedian's imaginary sandwich bar programme following the complaint that it broken
to it.
Had broken the broadcaster's rules on accuracy. They today ruled that the programme, which aired on March the 5th, did not breach editorial standards. Early in the episode, Sale adopted a silly high-pitched voice and pretended to be BBC Director General Tim Davie. In that guise, he squeaked, and I am obviously able to do that for you. People say to me, Alexis should be less controversial, less inflammatory, less aggressive, but I say, no, you go, girl! You carry on, say what you like. It doesn't matter if some of the things you say might not be entirely factually correct. Some of the things you say might be disturbingly partisan or just deranged or extremely unpleasant, but the country desperately needs you to say these things. In today's ruling, the editorial complaints unit said, this would have led listeners in general to expect something less than strict accuracy. In what followed. Later in the programme, Sales spoke about the Galicia division of the SS, which was largely comprised of Ukrainian volunteers. He said, after the war, 8,000 members of the Galicia division, because they were ferociously right-wing and would be useful to MI6, were allowed secretly to come to Britain, where they were given homes, incomes and new identities. The comedy magician Tommy Cooper was in the Galicia division. Cilla Black was another one. And both Rod Hull and Emu. The listener complained the programme contained inaccuracies about Ukrainian history, particularly in relation to the role of the 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS, brackets First Galician, in the Second World War. Watchuk said it was unlikely that listeners would have taken Mr. Sale to have been speaking literally when he made his comments, particularly as he went on to identify Tommy Cooper, Cilla Black, and both Rod Hull and Emu oh, yeah. as being among their number. Accordingly, the ECU found no departure from the BBC standards of due accuracy. Home Office, and I've actually spoken to Emu's daughter is actually a good friend of mine, and she works in the media, of course, herself, being a nepo baby or a nepo, whatever the fuck that is, and yeah, Emu's daughter Janice Emu is a very good friend of mine, and she was very supportive of. As was Cilla Black, who's been dead for God knows how many years. Home Office papers reveal how 7,100 Ukrainian men from the Notorious Division were allowed to settle in Britain in 1947 to protect them from persecution in Stalinist-controlled Ukraine. I would demur. I suppose Chortle really isn't the paper of record, is it? But I think they were settled in Britain to let them avoid prosecution for war crimes. But anyway, a 2001 ITV documentary claimed that their wartime activities were not properly investigated. You can say that again. Although 32 members were said to have been denied entry because of their war record. The division is hailed by the far right in Ukraine, although President Volodymyr Zelensky has condemned a march that praised them, and its insignia is widely classified as a hate symbol. So there you go. Wow. I am clear. Phew, I was worried about that. Obviously, I was really rich from BBC Audio had told me that. But I think the guy he objects to me. I mean, if you're in the fucking SS,
yeah,
you're gonna be a fucking Nazi, aren't you? He's saying that, and actually, I had a friend, Marco, whose father was actually in the Galician division.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I'm speaking from a position of authority.
And so the guy who complained, his complaint wasn't actually about Emu, it was about...
No, I think...
It was about the Ukrainians.
It was about the representation of... The Galician division were Nazis.
It's a dangerous time to be insulting anything to do with Ukraine, really.
Yeah. Have you... Linda noticed something. Did you notice as soon as the Russian invasion of Ukraine happened that all the other product in the supermarkets called Chicken Kiev...
Oh, yeah.
Was now changed to Chicken Kaviv. And I don't know whether they had to, like, take them all off the shelves or... I don't know. But now they've gone back to being called Chicken Kiev, she thinks, which...
Only in Tesco.
Only in Tesco.
So Tesco knows something that... about the coming...
That's wild.
So anyway, I've avoided... I've avoided prosecution once again by BBC has stood by me.
We're supposed to say Kiev, isn't it? Anyway.
Kiev, isn't it? I don't know.
And we can't say Turkey anymore. We're supposed to say
Turkey
drumsticks.
Yeah. But interestingly, this is not. I was talking to somebody. Radicals don't say Myanmar; they say Burma.
Right.
Yeah. It's not funny. It's just. It's just a thing somebody told me.
And if you're truly a radical, you wouldn't call any Arab country by their names. You'd just call the whole region Arabia, wouldn't you? Because that was the Brits.
The caliphate. I think you're going to be ISIS on me.
I'm saying those are Western-made borders, aren't they?
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah. We bought some furniture. Do you remember we bought some furniture from a shop in Brighton, hand-painted in Rajasthan, and the shop was called ISIS. They must have thought, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I've met a person called ISIS before as well.
Yeah?
Really, yeah, unfortunate.
And there was a...
And I know a few guys called Jihad as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very common name.
Yeah. I knew some people. This is before he was well-known... they just heard his name, like mentioned once, that they call their cat Osama bin Laden. And then the cat was like, did wander a lot, and they worried about him. So they would stand in their garden going, Osama! Osama!
Osama bin Laden, come back here right now!
Yeah. They regret it. And there was a shop on Wigmore Street as well. So fair old kitchen equipment called Tsunami as well. That is also
fucking hell.
Unfortunately named.
What else?
That shop selling candy called COVID-19.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate.
I was like,
victim
well,
of bad timing.
Yeah.
Hey, Lexi, there's
an improvised.
There's a new pope.
Yeah, thank you, Talal.
There's a topic.
Yeah, there is. Yeah,
he's all American.
Yeah, and but he's a good guy.
Yeah, he was today saying he wants a ceasefire immediately, and he wants
good
food
for
in
him.
Gaza.
Yeah. Yeah. Bunch of fucking.
It's hard to really care what the Pope says, but when it's stuff
well,
like
no,
that,
it's a. Well, I mean, good. It's not. I suppose not a sorry situation when the Pope is way to the. Left of the fucking leader of the Labour Party. It's like a fucking pope, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, fucking.
And do you
Starmer.
Believe all this cocaine stuff with Keir Starmer?
That we talked about in the dressing room? I don't know if anybody's... Well, Talal, I'm outraged by this. I don't know. Linda showed me this. I don't know if anybody else has seen it. This supposedly shot on a train with Mertz.
Macron
and Starmer. And then a TV crew bursts in on them unexpectedly. And Mertz hides like a spoon.
Macron is
like hiding this little baggy.
Yeah, Macron hides the baggy.
And
they're all their hair's a bit disheveled.
Yeah.
And they're smiling a lot.
Yeah, and they're going, I've got this really great idea. I'm gonna take all the money off the pensioners and I'm gonna give it to rich people. Actually, I've never. This is a terrible admission. I think I've never actually taken cocaine. Well, your mum's here, so you can't. So you haven't either.
course not.
I did years ago. Years ago, I was doing this film called Mr. Corbett's Ghost with Paul Scofield. And I was sharing a dressing room with a young actor who starts snorting this cocaine. He said, do you want some? And I didn't want to say I'd never taken it, but I wanted to appear cool. And so I said to him, I said, no, man, because I was thinking of dope. And I sort of said, no, it just slows me up. No. So this actor must think, Alexis has taken so much fucking cocaine. It's having like the reverse effect.
Full circle.
It's like, yeah. I'm really mellow. I don't know. It would be interesting if, I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me, I guess. You know, these world leaders are all probably doing
blow,
mad drugs, and you know, Elon Musk is on ketamine all the time.
Yeah, that's
probably
it.
All go to wild orgies and shit. You know, who knows what these fucking world leaders get up to?
Yeah,
they have literally all the power.
You're right there, Talal.
Thanks, man. But it did look.
Somebody should do something about it. I think. I don't know about. I don't know how you feel, but I think somebody should do something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like really bad.
Take the power really back.
Bad. It's like really bad.
Yeah, totally bad.
What else? What else did we talk about?
Should we try a segment? We tried our segment in the last live show.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Alexi, time for our next segment of the show. why don't you tell me what's really been winding you up this week, Alexi?
What grinds my gears?
Yeah, what's pissing you off?
That's okay. Well, I always these days people say how are you, and I always refer to the you know those three buttons that you have. You know when you're leaving.
The
customs at the airport. Yeah. There's like three buttons. There's like a really angry red face.
Yeah,
and then there's an orange kind of. Yeah. Okay face, and there's a green happy face.
Yeah, you see them in train station toilets as well. Yeah.
And I always say I'm orange button. I'm never that's about as happy as I can be these days. It's kind of orange button.
Yeah.
Which is not good. I mean, you know, it's not a great, it's okay place to be, but it's not, you know, it's not a, I'll say I'm orange button, and then I don't bother explaining it. So people say, oh, I say I'm orange button, and they're like, what the fuck?
I'm going to start doing
have to explain
Let's
it.
Let's get that to spread,
Yeah. I don't know. Is this too in? We had a conversation with Adam at the back of there. He's a Spurs fan. And we had a long conversation about Ange Postecoglou.
Right.
And this, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. Really. I'm not. But I don't know. I find myself often feeling sorry for failing football managers. It's a weird kind of sin, and I'm upset when and I sort of find myself sort of supporting their teams and stuff.
All right, yeah.
And
you like the supporting the underdog, don't you?
Yeah, it's not. I don't know. I just feel weirdly sorry for failing football managers.
Is that who Ange?
This isn't good. Yeah, Ange Postecoglou is the manager of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, who are doing very badly this year.
Right.
And
is that your team?
No.
No.
No, no. So it's Adam's team.
Why is that pissing you off?
It isn't really. I've forgotten that. Well, it's all. No, I don't know. I just. I was saying to Adam, I'm invested in this. I was saying, even though he's failed them, they should hang on to him. What's the point of change? You know, they change.
Managers are they firing him? Oh, right.
Well, they're not at the moment, are they? They're hanging on to him. We don't know, really. They may hang on to him. But I think... Well, it's also... Well, look, this is like... This is getting
come
really...
Come on, come on. Get angry. Come on.
It's just worth £17. No, but... I'm not sure. I always think this is a sort of... It doesn't grind my gears exactly, but it's just that when... Like a footballer says, like, I had a lean patch, but then the governor really believed in me, and now I've scored 5 goals on the run. I think, well, the governor, that's just still transactional, isn't it, really? I think, you know, the governor only, because he knew that you would come good and score 5 goals. But it'd be more, so if the governor hung on to you, even though you were shit, year after year, that would be truly kind of like human, wouldn't it? Like, it wouldn't be transactional then. You should be... you should be like, I think what every yeah. I don't know. I think like every football club should have one old bloke in the team, for instance. Like me. There's one old bloke in the team just to make it, just to mix it up, you know, just to kind of go crazy, just because it's winning all the time, you know, it's like, yeah. It's banal, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's not interesting. So every football team has to have one old bloke in their team. You remind me of things interesting. I don't know. This is, I don't know. It's just going.
It's anyway. Good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. Yeah. You reminded me of when I landed in Sydney when I was 18, and I had no money. I had to get a job straight away. I was doing some traveling on my own, and I was working on a building site with all Tongans. Yeah, with these like you know, like massive brick shit house dudes. Yeah, but they had, so it was like. Help yourself. There was like
my fucking podcast.
There was like 9 of them, and they're all fucking massive and very intimidating. And it took me a while to like break in and win their favor. But there was one old guy who was skinny and would smoke, would not really do much work. We're all like digging, and he's just standing there smoking, and no one could ever say. They'd get all the respect, and he'd like give advice and stuff. So that could be. Trying to relate to the story, to the thing, idea you had.
It's just going anywhere.
So it's like the footballer you with the old man on the football team. He could just kind of stand at the side.
Is that it?
And they can just...
Is that the story?
You remind
me. Talal, he failed you. He's humiliating himself.
I don't want to bore you with my whole story of Australia, man.
No, God, no.
Yeah. There's more, yeah.
I also, I went on a, oh, well, yes. So I also went on a, I went on a, the rolling fast, I went on a fast outside
yes.
Parliament protesting against it on, with yeah. Jews. With
on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. And yeah, I didn't eat anything while I was on the fast. I didn't like conspicuously. I thought that might get a laugh, but no, it's just horrible, isn't it? So I went on fast, and then I also went in the evening to, it was a very activist day, to see the Genesis Cinema. There's a film coming out called something, what's it called? Something How to Wreck a War Machine or something, which is about Palestine Action. Mm-hmm. And it shows, which is a group that we've supported. And
that's, yeah, but what the fuck up, is a rolling fast?
Well, I don't know.
Like solidarity and power to you, but
I think it means, I don't know. Well, obviously it means you kind of fast outside Parliament, but only from 10 to 4.
Doesn't sound that, yeah, you take shifts fasted. That's not,
yeah, I'd not stayed quite about half an hour as well, really. I don't know. You know, I thought of first because it was highlighted. It said rolling. The email said, "I hope rolling fast." And I thought they were saying like, "Yeah, we're rolling fast on this. We're rolling fast on this topic. We're getting." Yeah. Anyway, I stood outside Parliament for about an hour on Tuesday
and didn't eat.
And didn't eat.
Well, no,
didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some horrible. So most people were supportive. There was a horrible cunt called Ian Austin who went past, and he's going, "Oh, it's the hostages." Fuck you, you twat. Yeah. Horrible man. And then in the evening, yeah, I went to see a film called About Palestine Action, about
Know,
the people who smash up Elbit factories in.
They're like the people who are actually
doing something, doing
actually making a difference, man. Yeah. They actually have shut down factories and slowed down the war machine, even by their fraction that they're capable of.
Yeah.
Fucking hats off to Palestine, actually.
Yeah, and we've had one of their people, AJ, haven't we, a couple of times on. So we
their run-ins with the law and
Well, we treated like shit. We entirely back them and.
So should all of you. Palestine Action, everybody.
They're good people. And quick, get me a topic that's funny.
Sure. Well, I'm going to Bristol tomorrow.
All right.
And I was wondering if you had any stories about Bristol.
Thank you.
Oh, you shot young ones in Bristol, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We shot the exteriors in Bristol. But also, well, two stories about Bristol. One, I have told this a few times. But one, I was... I used to play the Bristol Colston Slave Trader Hall, and so one I was doing it, I was playing it was the same gig really, and I did a line, and somebody in the audience shouted out, "You said that the last time you were here," So I did, you know, like as comics, you have all these prepared put downs. You know, it's not all spontaneous. I'm not saying this for the first time. Well, I'm saying this for the first time, obviously, because I've not prepared anything. But so I used one of my prepared put downs, which was, well, you're a daft twat to pay to hear it again, then, aren't you? And he said, you said that last time as well.
You got your ass, yeah, man. You got your ass.
I said, fuck it, you win, mate. And the other... So the other one was, I don't think I've told this story very often, is that I think it was the same gig, it was the same night, and I didn't used to sign merch. I didn't sell merch. Or I thought it was, I don't know, I just tacky. Had some weird ideas that it was tacky and stuff. And later on, I was like, fucking tea towels, Lexi sale, fucking dolls, you know, anything, I'll fucking sign it. Anyway, at the time, I didn't have anything, you know. So, and then my tour manager came back, and he said, there's a skinhead outside, and he'd like to, you know, come and chat to you or see you, you know. And I said, yeah, I'm sure. And so this big, tall skinhead came back, and I said to him, I'm going to do a Bristol accent here. I said, do you want an autograph? Because I'll give you an autograph. I said, do you want an autograph? And he said, no, he said, or he'd like a headbutt, please. And I said, what? He said, I'd like you to headbutt me. I'd like a souvenir headbutt. So, again, this is like not wanting to look cool. This is the same Alexi that said cocaine slowed him down. That, I said, yeah, sure, okay. I said, so bend down, right? And because he was very tall. And now the idea with a headbutt is that you use your forehead to break the person's nose. But obviously, I couldn't do that. I wasn't going to break a punter's nose. So with my forehead, he bent down like, and I went, bam, with my forehead right into his forehead, like really hard, right?
Ouch.
And he said, oh, thanks, mate, thanks. That's fantastic. And I said, hey, man, no problem, okay, yeah, see. And I got back in the dressing room and went, oh, fucking hell! So that's the thing that happened to me in Bristol.
In Bristol, great story. Yeah, thanks, I'm glad I asked.
I don't know. Apart from that, yeah. Very nice.
Got some good questions from the Patreon.
Want
here.
Some more of your awards?
Oh, go ahead. Help yourself, sir. There you are, sir.
Shukran.
You're welcome, sir. What if you changed this from AP? What if you changed the format to be like Linda interviews Talal while Alexi stands at the back shouting ad libs? It's always people's favorite part when Linda shouts shit out from the back.
It came because it was when I went back to touring, wasn't it, originally? Mm. And I said, what did you were worried? What would you...
Diluting the legacy.
That's right. Is she...
That's brilliant. She was worried that your new tour would be diluting your legacy.
Yeah, if people saw me now and said how shit I was and stuff like that, that they would... become disillusioned. So I used to say to her, and then that got kind of cocky, didn't I? There's one episode of Sandwich Bar where we just have a row, don't we, for about... Cause it was that thing where I said I had this idea that your secret power was that you could convert any decimal currency back into the old money. And then I said, what's 12p and you couldn't do it? And then then we had a row about whether you could do it or not. So how much is 12p in the old money?
2 and 4.
2 and 4, but, okay. All right, how much is...
That's enough,
Lex, that's enough.
Don't you know?
How much is 17... How much is 17 Swedish krona, then, if you say...
Has the Linda heckled you at your stand-up shows ever?
Well, that's I used to do that. We used to do that bit.
But not a sandwich bar. Like, how? When was the first time Linda heckled you at one of your shows?
Yeah, it was that when we did that. The legacy bit. It was all pre-planned. People thought it was spontaneous.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't. It was it was cynically pre-planned, really. You've never really heckled... Well, you're heckling me now, but, I mean, you've never...
Look at the Comedy Store and stuff back in the day.
No.
Now that's
actually your mother. That's... Oh, you're right, yeah. Oh, I did it.
You go over the genuine.
That's right, I did. I was just going to... I should have brought a bit more. I read from the memoir last week, didn't I?
Yeah.
But no, I did... before my first volume of memoir came out, I did a book reading at an art centre in Crosby, just outside Liverpool, and my mother came. And she heckled me. Yeah, she went, lies, lies. It's all lies. Because me and my mother used to have this row about, because I bought her a house. The first thing I did, even before we got a house, I bought my mother a house. And I bought Linda's parents a house as well. And so my mother was reluctant. She wouldn't decide on a house until I bought Linda's parents a house, and then she found one immediately that was 25% more expensive. And she was waiting for Linda's parents to be bought a house before she would choose one. Anyway, then it began a lifelong quest for me to try and get my mother to say thank you. And she'd say, "You wrote all them books about me." So, you know, I don't have to say. And then once she said, "Well, you never say thank you for all that food I bought you when you were a child." I'm like, you fucking had to do that.
Yeah.
You would have been arrested if you didn't do that.
Neglect, yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, my mum's already got a house. And
lies, lies. Oh, lies, Alexis, a liar.
I was doing a show once and my mum was in the front row and I said fuck at one point and I heard my mum going tutting and I stopped everything and said fuck off mum, you chose to come stand at the front in the fucking show.
That's fucking brilliant. First time I was on television, I rang my mum on the show called Boom Boom Out of the Lights, and I rang my mum the next day to say, "What do you think?" And she said, "Well, Keith Allen wasn't very good either."
I did one show. My mum brought me food in a Tupperware box. I got her to bring it on stage for me. That was sweet, nice. Yeah.
My mother never did anything nice like that. No.
It was called kusamashi.
What?
The food.
Oh, right. That's not called... That's not Arabic for food that a mother brings to her stand-up. That would be an amazing language. And then Arabic's so incredible. Yeah. It's got a word for food that a mother brings her stand-up son onto the stage. Kushamaki. Because it happens all the time in Arabic culture.
It sounds like that one Arabic swear word that you know.
Kusamaki. Yeah. Sorry, Mum.
One more. Paul asks about. He said he's had the misfortune of watching Carry On Columbus, which you're in. he wanted to know, while you're working with Maureen Lipman, was there any indication what a hateful, poisonous person she'd end up to be?
Well, yeah, that's a whole. I mean, I used to say, I didn't know what I was doing. They held a giant check over my eyes when I was signing the contract, but. I don't know what the fuck I thought I was doing. I mean, we talked a bit, didn't we, about I sometimes think about doing a whole show about the terrible films I've been in, and which Carry On Columbus, in a way, is probably one of the worst. That I didn't even like Carry On films. I always thought they were awful. I can't remember why I said we would do it. I mean, it's always a bad indication for a start on a film if you're having a great time when you're on a movie, because it means the movie's going to be shit, really. And we were, a lot of the time, we were actually drunk, I think, on that film. Yeah. But Maureen Lipman at that point, really, it was before shit got serious, I think. And we got on very well, really, that we... We just chatted. I mean, it's sort of patronising, really. But I mean, I think that when Jack Rosenthal, her husband, who was a great, really great writer, died, I think she kind of went a bit loopy after that, really. And then, I mean, she's terrible now. She's awful. I did see her. We went to Linda had been to some play at theatre, and then she was in the audience. Because she was friendly with. I mean, So I mean, Maureen Lipman at the time was fine, and then I remember Bernard Cribbins was. Me and him talked about ammunition all the time, guns and stuff.
You found your soulmate.
Yeah, we got on very well. Yeah. And but it's an awful, awful film. I think I was trying to. I don't know whether it was when we. Which you know what year it was?
I think 92.
92. So we talked a little bit, didn't we, about 1990s Alexei, who felt a bit lost, you know, and he was hanging around the Zanzibar club in his unstructured Armani suit with chatting to Anthony Worrell Thompson.
Yeah.
And
and
I think at that point I felt a bit kind of I didn't quite know who I was anymore, and that's one of the reasons why I did that movie. Oh. Really. Keith Allen's also in it.
Yeah.
Rick Mayall's in it. Peter Richardson's in it.
Oh, it's a fucking great cast.
But it's just
you had too
awful,
much fun.
Awful. Yeah, we did. We were fucking laughing our heads off.
I remember doing research once and watching a clip of it, and you were like looking through a hole in a wall and like perving on a girl or something.
Yeah. It was terrible. It's awful. I mean, probably not by any means the worst film I've ever been in, but I've done worse than that, but it's probably the most terrible, terrible film. Really.
When did you become aware of Palestine as a cause? When did that become important for you?
I'm not entirely sure, but I when I first moved down to London, I had this friend in Liverpool called Wasim Abdullah,
that's back in the '70s.
I met your dad. Yeah. Wasim, was an electronics engineer at Plessy's in Liverpool.
So did he indoctrinate you?
Well, I think I've always, I don't know, partly I love Palestinians. I mean, it sounds kind of, but Wasim and his friends were so full of life, really, and just that I took to them on a personal level. I think I always took their point of view, really, and just naturally. It's the great moral. I mean, I was doing Mark Steele's. We were talking about this on Mark Steele's podcast last week, and it's the great moral question of our age that you can't be, you know, you have to be pro-Palestinian. You can't not be, I think, really. And so I think that. Oh, thank you. yeah.
It's true. No, man. I'm so proud to get to work with you because of your kind of your stance on that. But I'm curious as to when it became, like, was it 2023 that it became a vital concern?
I'm a founder member of MAP. I think I'm a patron. I've been in PSC since the early days, really. And I remember doing this thing, Hard Talk, which was on BBC.
They had you on fucking Hard
Talk. They had me on fucking Hard Talk.
The fuck?
And I said on.
Carry on Columbus.
And that was BBC. It was on the World Service, BBC Worldwide. And I actually said, the guy's not too bad. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his fucking
name. Yeah, but he's.
Sorry?
Steven Sacker. Was it him? I can't remember if it was him who was doing it, or it was, I think somebody else might be doing it with that show. But I said that one of the problems with, and this was Palestine, one of the problems that the PLO had was how ugly Yasser Arafat was. He wasn't a good looking guy. I said that I should be, and I think I suggested that I should be made the head of PLO and Hezbollah. Because I'm Jewish, so that would be like show that they're not prejudiced, you know, that'd be interesting. I said, and I'm kind of good looking, you know. I said, not really thinking that this was actually going out in the Middle East, you know, and it was,
Oh, that's
but
so
it was
fucked.
It was a kind of barometer of how you could go on shows and say stuff like that then.
Oh, my God.
You know.
So that was July the 9th, 2004, I think. And that was Gavin Esler.
Oh, yeah.
Our friend Gavin Esler.
Yeah. I didn't know it was that late, actually. I thought I'd done it before. But does it say then that I said I should be the head of the PRO?
No, I can't wait to watch it, though.
I thought it should be... Yeah, I thought, and that was like a funny thing then. You could say stuff like that then, and it wasn't.
They shouldn't
people
have
wouldn't
on.
Get upset.
any backlash from that, from the Middle East?
No, nobody. They seemed bothered, really.
Yeah,
no,
were chill
but it is. I mean, it's always seemed. I mean, that, you know, I mean, particularly now, but it's all. I mean, the state of Israel has always been this kind of, you know, stain on.
Yeah.
On the West, really, and it's you know, this is only the well, I'll tell this story. I don't know because I'll tell this story. Wasim was actually in Sabra and Shatila when the Israeli forces under Ariel Sharon surrounded the camp and wouldn't let anybody out, and then their allies in the
he was in what sorry
Sabra Shatila refugee camp during the Lebanese civil war in 1982 he decided to go back to Lebanon just before civil war broke out. He was very unlucky about it, and he was in the refugee camp when the civilians were massacred by, and he said. And we afterwards, a group of us friends, we got him back to Britain for hospital treatment for a terrible injury he'd got on a roundabout just outside Warrington. She was a terrible driver. And so we got him back, and I took Wasim to the pub, and this was a man who'd seen now, you know, it's obviously not the worst thing, but now he'd seen terrible things that... no person could see. And he asked for this particular drink. And I said, why did you ask for that drink? And he said, all the time I was in Sabra and Shatila, we had no food, we had no medicine, we had no ammunition, but we always had Bailey's Irish Cream.
Good drink,
and I had this idea that, like, the Bailey's Irish Cream rep, I mean, the fucking Red Crescent couldn't get through, Red Cross, but the Bailey's Irish Cream rep, he'd parked the Cortina Estate, you know, on the Syrian border, and he crawled under the wire, you know, past the IDF, and he'd go, all right, Mr. Arafat, now I've got the standard 75 milliliter bottles, though. But how about this? It's lovely for Christmas, like, it's a little... You heat it up in the microwave and it's a warming Irish coffee for Christmas. As I said, a bit Bailey's Irish Cream, yeah. So,
That's
but wonderful. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him for a few years, but we stay in touch, really.
Yeah, good man.
And he's in Ramallah now, but he's also got kind of Greek citizenship, so he's got an out. It's always seemed, the greatest, you know, I mean, for all those reasons, everybody, that it should be Jewish people who are doing it, you know, the aggressor, you know, the abused becoming the abuser. I mean, the kind of cliche of that, and it's just, yeah, it's always been the greatest, you know, it's the great moral issue of our time, really, I think. And, you know, particularly it's kicked up a gear now.
It's really coming to a head, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I'm never better than Orange Face. It's because of that, really, you know.
Well, thanks for all the solidarity over the years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Right, Alexi, time for a quiz. Which young one are you?
Didn't we do that last week?
No, we did the communist quiz.
I'm in the young ones. Why would I be? Obviously, if I'm a young one's character, I'd be Jerzy Belofsky.
Yeah, well, let's
which
see.
Which I was.
See if youquiz.com agrees, Alexi.
All right.
Oh, there might be some good questions right, in here, and then we'll take some questions from the audience.
Yeah.
What was your reason for going to college?
Because I could draw. I want to go to college. It's technicality. Have you been expelled from school if they just tell you not to come back? So I was kind of expelled from school halfway through the sixth form. I wanted to go to further than high, and I couldn't. I got no O-levels or anything like that, but I could draw a horse out my head without looking at a photo. So I got into I got into Southport College of Art, and then subsequently I got into Chelsea School of Art.
All right. Yeah. Okay, what are your thoughts on Disney's Peter Pan?
Well, my Disney's Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Well,
first thought,
well, I mean,
best thought.
It's about death, really, isn't it? Peter Pan in general, if you do a proper analysis, I mean, it's about abducted children, isn't it? It's actually it's an extremely bleak book, really.
They've got that here, actually.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's very bleak, Peter Pan, really.
And
I don't know why people think it's, Peter Pan is also an abused child who won't grow up, isn't it? I mean, it's very bleak, really. As for Noddy, don't get me started. Noddy.
Do you partake in recreational drugs? We know the answer to that.
Yeah,
you've
not
never
anymore.
Done a weed, right?
No. I smoked dope, but that's all.
What is your favourite medium?
Medium? What's my favourite medium?
Yeah, written, visual, spoken.
Oh.
Derek Akora.
Derek
Con.
Good gag, Derek Akora. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
fine.
I don't know.
Skipping that one. Did you have fun making The Young Ones, Alexi, while I did it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, yeah.
Oh,
well, have you got anybody next to you? Is your date not come on? I'm doing crowd work. I've never done crowd work before in my life. This is the first time I've actually ever talked to a member of the audience. I've been a comic now for 45 years, and this is the first time I've ever talked to her and said, why is that seat? You know, yeah, so I'm learning new things all the time. I'm learning to do the same old shite that every fucking hack comic does. So why is that seat?
I told my partner... And we came to watch the work through for the...
Is this going to be sad?
No.
All right.
Only in the fact that she chose to go to Poole Harbour and take a boat trip bird watching this morning rather than come here.
Really? You bought her a ticket?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. I'm absolutely...
Yeah, good. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know,
someone else could have had that seat.
I did. If anybody comes in late...
The first show we did here... in this run,
yeah.
This guy, lovely guy, came up to me afterwards and says, I love the podcast so much. You've given me so much joy. I really appreciate what you and Alexi have given us. This is my favourite podcast. I said, and I thought, oh, good opportunity to do a quick survey, marketing research. I said, what other podcasts do you listen to, by the way? He goes, I don't listen to it. I've never listened to another podcast in my life. So it kind of ruined that compliment. Well, that would get a big laugh. All right, question 10. How often how often do you lie?
How often do I lie? Yeah. No, never. He lied.
Lies!
Yes, I lie about my mother all the time. Yeah.
Lies!
Nearly
What's
done.
This? Is this?
Nearly done. Oh, you don't play video games. I can skip that one. Oh, what is your D&D alignment? We know you don't like D&D. Would you consider yourself chaotic, neutral, or lawful?
Chaotic, I suppose.
Okay, nice.
Is this really going to tell me what young ones?
Yes, it is.
Right?
Last one. Oh. Yeah. And would you consider yourself good, neutral, or evil? These are Dungeons & Dragons alignment terms.
Oh,
I'm
right.
Chaotic, good. I'm neutral, evil. I'm lawful.
I'm good.
You are good.
Good.
All right, here we go. Drum roll, please. What young ones is Alexi? What young ones is Alexi? Keep the drum. Oh, you are the fifth housemate. That's it. And there's a picture of the weird shadowy figure. And
that's just you. Sat at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
Never did anything.
That's fucking you, mate.
Yeah.
That's where you are. That's where he is. Right, who's got a question for Alexi in the audience? Let's start with Lonely Balls at the front end.
Yeah.
You talked about the shit film that you've been in. What was your favourite and best film that you
would have? Best film? Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, obviously the most popular one is Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. Thank you. That's the most... That's the most popular one. Yeah. I've
where
been
you wore
in.
My heritage as a costume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have
a favourite, the personal favourite?
Yeah.
Everyone goes on about that Gosford Gobbly Bobblies. What's it called?
What?
Gobbly. What am I thinking of?
I don't know. What are you
thinking
of?
You get hung out the window.
Gorky Park.
Gorky Park, that's it. Gosford Park.
Yeah, that was my first one. There's a film Screen 2 called Night Voice that I did, where I play a kind of late night DJ. And
That was a TV movie, wasn't it?
And I think I'm really good in that. Really. I mean, I used to get cast as hard cases, you know, gangsters and stuff, and I'm actually very bad at doing that. And I'm better at doing kind of slippery, kind of neutral characters. I think that, and I think Night Voice is probably, I think it's on YouTube somewhere, really. Yeah.
What's your dream role?
I don't know. I mean, I should have put more effort into my acting career than I did, really, I think. So I never really got that kind of.
I've had a few. But your dream, like now, if you could get hired now, like what would be like? Because you said
now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm. Something good.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think I can do those kind of. I just turned down. I was offered a week's work on Father Brown with Mark, and I turned it down. So. Because I can't kind of face those 5:30 a.m. calls, really. I don't know that I could be in a movie anymore, really. It's not very...
Well, your dream role would be a good role with a late call time.
Yeah, yeah. it's like...
A post-breakfast call time.
I don't know if you've seen The Mousetrap.
Yeah.
And there's a woman in The Mousetrap who's murdered in the first act. And when they do the curtain call at the end, she's not there because she's gone home. Obviously, she's like, fuck, I'm not going to hang around for the fucking curtain call. Fuck this. So, I mean, yeah, something like that. Somebody in a play who got murdered quite early on
that's
would be,
one,
yeah.
That's a good one.
Would be good, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'll think about that. I mean, I was good at playing kind of slippery kind of people, I think, some morally kind of dubious people. I was bad at playing hard cases, really. Yeah.
No, you're a fine actor.
I can be. All right, I'm not great. I can be good.
When you squint your eye and tilt your head, you do look terrifying.
Do I?
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. Yeah, that, yeah. Anyone else got a question for the main man? Right at the back there, please.
SNL's come to the UK. Will it be good, and what will make it not bad?
Oh, Saturday Night Live. I suspect it won't be great, really. I mean, they'll have Josh Widdicombe in it, won't they? I mean, yeah. I mean, they'll cast it. It'd be so shit. The casting will be so safe, and the people won't be. You know, nobody interesting will be cast in it, I suspect. Really.
I've got a bit of intel on it. Everyone I know has sent in their audition tape. The deadline was 2 nights ago.
Right.
And I forgot to do mine.
You wouldn't have got in anyway.
Thanks. Fucking cunt.
I mean, it's also, yeah, I mean... Yeah,
go on.
No, just reusing the format like that, I think. I mean, they've tried to do Saturday Night Live here a few times. It's never really worked. Yeah.
Well, here's the angle they're doing this time, because this is what Lorne Michaels has figured out, is that the only reason Saturday Night Live has survived the last 5 years is because of online content it generates. And because of all the hits it gets on TikTok and YouTube,
right,
that's where they actually make their money.
Right.
And so they want to focus on that for the UK version and make it completely TikTokable. And they want the cast are going to be like... And that's why I kind of half couldn't be asked to audition, because the cast are all going to be super young, kind of like TikTok up-and-comers
who are
going to really pull that audience in. And that's kind of... So I wouldn't be surprised if it was...
in portrait mode the whole fucking show.
Yeah. I mean, there's quite an interesting film. I think it's an HBO film, I think, about the first night.
Yeah,
it's quite an interesting film, really. And as somebody who's actually done a live late night comedy show, it did to a degree capture the atmosphere.
It's
you know,
SNL has always been my dream kind of gig.
I think it was really. I mean,
it looks
like
such fun. Yeah.
I mean, they brought a lot of stuff, but I remember Pamela Stevenson was in. People don't know who she is anymore.
That's Billy Connolly's wife.
Billy Connolly's wife.
Sad to define her by who her husband is.
One of the regulars for a while, and that woman is not funny. I mean, she was in not 9 o'clock news.
She was on Strictly when I worked on Strictly. She was
really?
When I was a runner on Strictly, and Paul Daniels was racist to me, and I witnessed someone get fucking one of the dancers harassing one of the other dancers. It was awful. But yeah, Paul Daniels. There was a oh my god, he's an awful twat.
I was awful.
Have you ever met him?
Well, kind of. I'd done this TV show. I can't remember what it was up in Glasgow, and then I got flown back, and I was in at the front in business class, and then I noticed everybody in business class. There was Paul Daniels, Lionel Blair, and this guy Nasty Nick from Big Brother.
Oh my
God. Do you remember him from the film? And I suddenly thought that maybe I died really, and now I was in an episode of like the Outer Limits. You know, imagine, because it was like as if the plane was filled just with terrible people, and it was some kind of flight to hell, you know.
It was a trap.
Flight 93999 to hell will be taking off from Glasgow International Airport. And so
the only plane that takes off downwards.
But one of the things, and Paul, I think I was in the front. One of the things that Paul Daniels did was that as we lined up, you know, people are, you know, lined up
to get on
off the plane.
Oh, to get off.
He wriggled his way through, and he was the first off the plane. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was horrible. But I mean, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised. You're not breaking any.
What do you think of magicians in general? Do you like magic shows?
Well, I did. I mean, I don't know. They're funny people. I mean, there's. Does a bit where they're standing in a lift next to waiting for a lift with like David Blaine or somebody, and he says, well, "Why are you waiting? Why don't you just fly up the stairs? You know, why are you doing?" I did a routine a bit like that. Paul Daniels, why are you wasting your time? You know, cars and so on, people in half. Why aren't you solving world hunger and stuff like that? If you genuinely have these, and you remember David Blaine? I had some relatives, David Blaine. Sat in a cardboard in a Perspex box.
Yeah, the one in the sky or the one in the ground?
Well, it was in London, wasn't it?
Yeah,
my relatives wanted to go see it. I said, if you want to just see somebody sitting doing nothing behind a Perspex wall, just go to a post office.
Any other? That's very good. Any other? Oh yes, lady there.
Who's my favourite stand-up comedian? I don't really like a lot. I mean, I don't see a lot of comedy, and I don't recommend anybody, really. We all comics want all other comics to die and fail. We discussed this.
Yeah, we do like Bill Burr, Louis C.K.
Yeah, Bill Burr, Louis C.K. I thought was amazing when I watched that show that he did. He sort of blotted his copybook later, but yeah. Louis C.K. And I was talking to Mark Steele about this one. The first time, because he said, first time I saw Robin Williams, that Robin Williams came down the Comedy Store when I was MC there in 1979. And then the first time I saw him, I couldn't figure out how he did it. Mm. He couldn't figure out. It did seem like magic, really.
He's the real magician.
I couldn't understand what he was doing. And then I watched him. I just, every time he came down, I would watch him. And finally, I figured out what he was doing and how he was doing it, and kind of respected him even more, really, then. But, you know, at first, I mean, that's what Mark said about comedy, that when he first of all saw it, he couldn't figure out how you did it, you know what I mean? And it's a difficult thing to get right. It's a lot of structure and a lot of work, really. So
I thought you were going to say, I finally figured out how he did it. It was cocaine.
Well, I was in LA once, and we were staying at the Chateau Marmont, and we were in the Belushi bungalow.
Oh.
And which is where John Belushi died. So we had like a Belushi party. We had a Belushi, because I look a bit like John Belushi. I did that. We had a Belushi party where people like dragged my body down the corridor, which, because like everybody was there, wasn't it? Spielberg was there, Robin Williams was
really?
There. Yeah, yeah, they covered it all up really. But they were everybody. Emu was there. Yeah, yeah, they were all there that night, really.
Starmer brought the drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stuart Lee, we always say Stuart Lee, yeah.
He's friend of the show. Yes, yeah. At the very front here.
You briefly mentioned Indiana Jones. Yeah. Can you share some memories?
Indiana
Jones memories.
So the first one, blow all my Indiana Jones stories here. The first one that I went to meet Steven Spielberg, I mean, it was an offer, really. He offered me the part. But I went to meet him at a hotel in just off Piccadilly. And he said, oh, Steven's see you in a minute, you know, so we can have a chat, but can you just wait for a minute? And I sat in this room, and there's about another 8 or 9 people in the room, and I thought, does this all look a bit familiar? And I'm getting like a vaguely kind of like negative vibe off these people. And then I realized afterwards that they were auditioning Hitler impersonators. Yeah, there's that bit where Indy bumps into Hitler and he signs the book for him. So they were auditioning, and everybody looked like Hitler. Apart from they all carried like little mustaches in like a tin or stuff, and they would take them out and put them on for the when they played it. I think they used it. So that was shall I do the gravy story, Linda? Should I? How much time have we got?
No, we've not got much time. Doesn't. So, but
I'll do the gravy story.
Oh yeah.
So they said. When we got out to Almeria, which was where we were shooting my bit, he said, come up the day before and meet Harrison and all the, you know, people. So I went up. So we got a Land Rover up into the Sierra Nevadas, I guess, behind Almeria. And I'd spent ages thinking about what to wear. It was the first time, you know, to meet George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, and so I decided. And I mean, Spielberg just fucking wears his own fucking merch, right? So you know, like Schindler's List baseball cap and stuff like that. But I wore this like white suit, like a linen suit, like a white suit, and like Noel Coward. And so I wore this kind of cream suit. So we got up there, and they said, "Well, Steven's actually filming further up the mountain, but." The second user. Anyway, so I knew the caterers because they'd done Corky Park. So I ordered, they did this pollo con herra, chicken in a kind of a sherry sauce. And so I had 4 portions of that. And then, so I was eating this chicken and gravy and that. And then finally George Lucas came back down from where they'd been filming, and they said, oh, we'll come and meet Steven in a minute. And I just before I was about to say hello to Steven Spielberg and meet George Lucas for the first time, I noticed in my groin this huge brown stain, which was the gravy from the pollo con herra. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I was standing near like a big bucket with mineral water. I got water and I threw it on my groin. And I was rubbing furiously in my groin. And I saw George Lucas was sitting in a canvas chair like that. Kind of going. And so what I did was I pulled the jacket over. Like so I was like Prince Charles. I pulled it. Hello, I'm so pleased to meet you. Hello, hello, hello. That's how I hit the stain that way. So Those are my. And the other thing was, well, which was Steve, when I met Harrison Ford, he said, the first thing he said to me was, I'm a really big fan of yours. And I thought, what the fucking hell use is that to me? You know what I mean? Give me some fucking money or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
buy me a house. Yeah.
Buy me a fucking house.
What a life you've led, Alexi. It's time to wrap up the show, believe. Isn't that sad? But, you know, I think...
How long have we been going?
We've been going an hour. You know, I think things are looking good. We're in talks about doing more shows here. A more regular placement, be a residency here or something. So thank you for coming out and supporting our little dry run at the Museum of Comedy. We really appreciate you all. Final words, Lex.
What? I was miles away there. What?
Last words.
Oh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye!
You've been listening to the Alexi Sale podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexisalepodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.